Welcome. This is Jingmu Sherpa, Veterans Matters Program Coordinator at the Medical Society of the State of New York. I am joined today by Dr. Jack McIntyre, past president of the American Psychiatric Association. Dr. McIntyre is involved in MISNI's Veterans Matters Program and its planning committee. He is board certified in psychiatry and has chaired the Clinical and Public Health Committee of the DSM-5. This discussion will focus on suicide in veterans and will help physicians address warning signs of suicidal behavior along with a discussion on prevention and treatment options. Suicide is a significantly important topic, both in the general population and among veterans. In the past few years, we have seen an increase in the suicide rates in both groups. Can you discuss the demographics behind the suicide rates in veterans specifically?
Yes, thank you, Jagmo, and I'm delighted to do this program today because, as you indicate, suicide has increased some 30% in the last 20 years. So it's a very, very important problem and tragedies that we face. About 20% of all suicides in the United States are veterans. About 20 or 22 veterans suicide every day. Generally, the means of suicide, over 50%, is by firearms. More active duty soldiers and veterans die by suicide than are killed in action, which is kind of a remarkable statistic if you stop and think about that. Men veterans are 3 times more likely to die by suicide than women veterans, and non-Hispanic white veterans are disproportionately at risk. Also, members of the LGBTQ community are especially high at risk. An important factor for physicians to keep in mind is that the highest rate of suicide for veterans is within 3 years of their discharge from active duty.
Can you describe some warning signs of suicidal behavior that physicians should be aware of?
A very important fact to be aware of as a physician is when the veteran appears as sad or depressed most of the time, or perhaps has significant symptoms of anxiety and agitation. Those can be important warning signs. Also, not eating, a decrease in appetite, or insomnia, not sleeping well, are other warning signs indicating perhaps a significant depression and suicidal thoughts. Another warning sign is the veteran neglecting their personal appearance and hygiene. Also, it may become apparent that they're losing interest in their work, school, or hobbies. A very important warning sign is when the veteran begins to talk about feeling trapped, feeling that there is no solution to their problems. But this particular sign, in terms of hopelessness, that they're not going to find a way out of whatever it is that is most troubling them, that's a very, very important warning sign.
What are some behavioral signs that can help physicians identify suicidal tendencies in veteran patients?
Well, as we discussed in terms of the warning sign, one of the behavioral signs can be a decreased performance at work or at school. Also, the veteran may exhibit some violent behaviors that were not typical before they became more depressed or upset. And this can indicate poor impulse control, which is also a significant factor in suicide attempts. The veteran giving away possessions, putting his or her affairs in order, is certainly a significant behavioral sign that should be attended to. And because of the frequency that firearms is the choice of seriously injuring or suiciding, the individual who is seeking access to firearms or perhaps to a large number of pills, those are also some behavioral signs that should be noted.
What comorbidities are common with suicide in veterans?
One comorbidity, which is very common and is very important because it increases significantly the risk of suicide, are substance use disorders. So alcohol or other drugs being misused is a common comorbidity. Also, for veterans, PTSD and TBI, traumatic brain injury, are two other comorbidities that frequently occur and are very, very important that they be recognized and treated. Certainly, depression and anxiety are two mental health issues that are very common comorbidities of suicide. So it's important that as physicians and healthcare providers, that these comorbidities be identified and treated appropriately if we really want to make a difference in terms of moving in the right direction and decreasing the suicide risk for our veterans.
What are some risk factors and how can physicians help reduce them?
First of all, a past history of suicide attempts is a very, very significant risk factor and significantly increases the chance of a successful or an active suicide attempt. But also, a family history of suicide is another important risk factor. As was just mentioned, certainly the drug and alcohol abuse is a significant risk factor, as is a depression or other psychiatric illnesses. LGBTQ population is especially a high risk population. Very important risk factor is what we call the lack of attachments. So an individual who is divorced, widowed, or single, and who has become increasingly isolated, that's a very important risk factor. And of course, during this time of COVID-19, that is increasingly apt to happen in terms of folks becoming more isolated. And of course, being shut in to stay at home increases the isolation for individuals. To reduce risk, probably the most important thing I think that we can do is listen to the veteran. Encourage him or her to tell their story without being interrupted and to lay out what they see as the important issues that they're facing and the things that bother them the most. Very often, the veteran, as other patients, will tell you what the major problem is if they have the opportunity and are not interrupted or moved on to other items. It's very important that the veteran be asked directly about suicidal thoughts and actions. And it's important that the clinician not beat around the bush in terms of asking these questions. So to ask directly, for example, the PHQ-9, which is a common screen now in primary care. The ninth question in that screen is, have you had thoughts that you would like to be dead or of hurting yourself in some way? So ask very directly. If you ask it directly, you're much more likely to get a response that is meaningful. And the old concern that you're going to put something into somebody's head by asking about it, that is absolutely not true. Asking about suicide directly is a very important and good thing to do. Also, in terms of addressing the risk factors, of course, we need to not only learn about any alcohol or drug abuse or depression, but then take steps to help the veteran with that, either directly in terms of a treatment ourselves or referring to appropriate specialists. And also, if a significant issue that the veteran talks about are things like episodic homelessness or other social issues, to try to put them in touch with the appropriate social services.
Can you discuss screening tools for assessing suicide risk? How can physicians determine risk level and recommendations?
One I briefly mentioned already, and that's the PHQ-9, which is a tool to assess significant depression. And as I mentioned, the ninth question is specifically about thoughts about being better off being dead or hurting yourself in some way. So that's a very important question. And the PHQ-9 is a wonderful tool to evaluate depression, including suicide risk. Also, SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, federal agency, has a program that's called SAFE-T. It stands for Suicide Assessment Five-Step Evaluation and Triage for Clinicians. But SAFE-T is a wonderful tool in terms of assessing suicide risk and then also what to do to be of help. One important part of the SAFE-T is that it also focuses on assets that the veteran has or positive factors or so-called protective factors that can be a help and reinforce to decrease the chance of an individual suiciding. So the SAFE-T is a very good tool to use, and it comes as a pocket card that clinicians can have, and is also an app on smartphones that can be downloaded directly from the SAMHSA site. Another longer assessment tool is called the Columbia Suicide Severity Rating Scale. Now, that is longer, but it's a very good tool to be familiar with because reading it, you begin to see some of the risk factors and also some of the positive factors and how to potentially intervene to mitigate some of those factors or reinforce the assets. So I think it's good for the clinicians to be aware of that tool, even if you don't use it with each patient that you see.
Please discuss effective treatment options such as psychotherapy and pharmacotherapy.
Fortunately, there are a number of tools that we have that can be of significant help. In terms of medication, generally what we're focused on is decreasing depression. As I mentioned, that's a very common comorbidity of suicide. So whatever we can do to decrease the depression is very important. The two major categories of antidepressants that we use and have found to be helpful in terms of depression and suicide are the so-called SSRIs, and they include fluoxetine. Sertraline is another example, or paroxetine. The SSRIs are very common antidepressants that are very popular in their use now because they're well tolerated with a low side effect profile. Another group of antidepressants are the so-called SNRIs, like venlafaxine or Effexor, and there's several other SNRIs also that can be of help in decreasing the symptoms of depression. Also for anxiety symptoms, benzodiazepines can be helpful, although we want to be careful about the benzodiazepine use because they are addicting, especially combined with alcohol or other illicit drugs, can actually be a significant problem in terms of increasing morbidity or mortality. So you want to be careful about the benzos, even though they are effective, and if they're used carefully and a very careful follow of the number of benzos being used, they can be helpful. Safer medications for anxiety include buspirone and hydroxyzine, two helpful drugs with relatively low side effect profiles. Profile, in terms of the different psychotherapies, there are a number of ones that are helpful, specific psychotherapies, what we call depression-specific psychotherapy. The most common is cognitive behavioral therapy, which focuses on the individual's thoughts, cognitive part of it, trying to replace negative thoughts with positive thoughts, or behavioral approaches in terms of having the veteran follow schedules or do certain techniques during the day to help decrease the focus on negative thoughts and feelings. The crucial aspect to psychotherapy is what I've mentioned before in terms of listening to the patient. The patient often will identify where the follow-up should be and what should happen in order to be of help to them. So listening attentively to the patient without interruption is very, very important. And then either if the clinician feels comfortable in using some specific psychotherapy, or again, referring to a mental health professional can be very important.
What barriers do veterans face in getting treatment or help?
Unfortunately, there are indeed a number of barriers to getting help, and that's why a relatively low percentage of people with significant depression and also suicidal ideation actually seek help and persist in getting the help that they need. And that certainly applies to veterans also. I think probably the most important barrier is lack of perceived need. So the individual doesn't really feel that they need some help. You know, they're down because of XYZ and that's the way it is and they don't need any help and not sure where they should go to get the help anyway. And they've heard that it's expensive, although currently it's not that expensive and most insurance policies cover the cost and the veteran benefits will cover the cost both within the VA system and also in a private practice that the veteran can arrange to get through the VA. Also, sometimes the veteran and other people feel that, well, it's not really going to be helpful. I'm going to go, but what good is that going to do? So the lack of effectiveness. And also, sometimes, especially men veterans, are afraid that they'll be identified as weak or there's something wrong with them and that they should be able to come out of this themselves. I guess a lot of this is linked under the general term of stigma, that there still is, unfortunately, a significant stigma about mental illness and also its treatment. You know, we need to overcome that, and the veteran needs to be assured that what they're feeling, what they're experiencing, the depression, is an illness, just like cancer, diabetes, etc. Nothing to be ashamed about. It's an illness that should be treated. And fortunately, there are treatments that work. And if we can convey that feeling of both it's an illness and also it can be treated, and it, in a large majority of cases, it'll improve, that's very important for the veteran to hear. There also are some hotlines that are available to help overcome some of these barriers. The National Suicide Prevention Line, which is 1-800-273-TALK, is a ready resource that many people have found very helpful. And there's also a veterans crisis line. And a number of veteran organizations that are ready and willing to be of help and have been very helpful in supporting veterans in their need.
Dr. McIntyre, thank you so much for your time and for providing the information on the topic, and thank you to our listeners. If you would like more information about any of the topics discussed here, please go to MISNI's CME website at cme.misni.org and look under resources. Additionally, there are several Veterans Matters webinars archived there. These programs provide participants with one free CME credit for each program.